Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Post podcast, where for the last number of months we've had controversy after controversy about cervical check. But at the weekend, our health editor Susan Mitchell was writing that the contagion of cervical check might in fact be moving on to breast check. There's mounting potential legal actions against breast check, a toxic working environment, and doctors threatening to walk. Susan, can you tell us what's going on within breast check first of all? How many women use this and the import of your story from Sunday?
Well, so this is a nationwide screening program that offers a check for potential cancers to women from the age of 50. And about 145,000 women are screened every year in Ireland. So it's a huge program, and there's a number of centres or units around the country that do this. But there are real concerns.
It's been one of the good news stories of the health service.
It has, exactly, because it's widely regarded as a very well-run and well-organised programme. But obviously the cervical check controversy is now, well, there are fears from doctors who are running the service that there's an erosion in public confidence in screening, full stop.
All screening, regardless exactly. of whether it's cervical or breast.
Exactly. And so what they're finding is that women are coming into those clinics for their screening tests and are very mistrustful. Some patients are openly hostile. And in that environment, which has become increasingly difficult, doctors, it's obviously not a very enjoyable or easy environment for doctors or nurses and others working in that environment. But that has also been exacerbated by a massive increase in the number of potential legal threats. So in breast check has been around for about 18 years. And over the course of those 18 years, it's received a handful of legal threats or legal letters. And since the cervical check crisis has exploded, it's received about 50. So you can see where this is going. And there are real concerns that there will be a massive explosion in the number of legal actions taken against the breast check programme.
Yeah, so it's kind of people, there's a contagion effect. It's not breast check in itself, but people are, do you think it's that they're struggling to see the difference between cervical check and breast check? They assume it's all the one.
I don't think that's it, but I just think that maybe initially I think that the health service, you know, has to acknowledge that it has failed in respect of this. The public or the average person doesn't really understand that screening, or hasn't up until recently understood that screening is, screening doesn't detect everything. It's a wide population-based tool that is used to try to reduce deaths and pick up cancers. But for example, in breast screening, for every 1,000 women screened, about 9 cancers will be missed. And that is just something that is...
It's not an error, it's not a mistake, it's just the nature of the system.
Exactly, and that's in every screening programme. Now, the difficulty, I suppose, is that we've obviously seen, you know, some very tragic cases like Vicky Phelan and Emma Vic-Vahuna, whose cancers were missed and where labs made significant multi-million euro payouts. So I think where this controversy is going to move to next is into determining, well, what's the difference between what Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has called or referred to as an avoidable screening miss compared to an unavoidable screening miss. So in other words, how do you determine negligence?
Yeah, and I suppose that's what an awful lot of the doctors in breast check are looking at it, looking, going like, we're getting threats, there's legal threats, do I need to be here?
Exactly. And I think as well, there's the whole area of negligence and screening is fraught with difficulty in terms of how you even determine it. So I had a look actually at the American Society for Cytopathology, and they were saying that in order to determine negligence in screening, and cytopathologists, just to say, are people who would be analysing the smear tests.
Yeah.
In order to determine negligence, you need to look back at slides not knowing that the woman developed cancer. That is a very difficult, it's called a blinded review. It's a very difficult thing to do. So it will be interesting to see how the government comes up with a mechanism for cervical check to try to ascertain that.
I mean, you were writing at the weekend, I suppose, under the heading, you know, how not to handle a health crisis, particularly in relation to the cervical check controversies that have been going on. I mean, it's been an omni-shambles in terms of the communication, in terms of doctors themselves, who are involved in this, But there's been so many political promises that now look as if they're vacuous and void.
Well, certainly it has been an omni shambles. That's the only word to use to describe it, really. And there's multiple different elements. The political system, I think, made a lot of knee-jerk reactions to this at the outset. And look, perhaps they were very well-intentioned and well-motivated.
The one that struck me, and not an expert on this, but it was Simon Harris coming out and saying, and backed up by the Taoiseach, that every woman who wants one can have a free smear test, which presumably is just creating pandemonium at the labs trying to deal with it, but also creating a sense of panic for any woman who's already had a smear test.
Well, exactly. Now, I think Simon Harris would say, well, he was encouraged to do this by some of the GP representative groups. But, you know, there have been obvious questions raised about this if we have an underlying problem with the laboratories. So one of the key questions that we still don't know the answer to is, do we have an underlying problem with our laboratories
that we've been using?
And we do not know, because we do not know the error rate. Now, perhaps there will be, I think Gabriel Scally's review will give us some indication. Yeah. And obviously the review of the individual slides will give us a better indication down the line. But as of yet, we don't know. So if there is an underlying problem with the laboratories, why are we offering women another smear test that's going back to those very same laboratories? But also, as we reported at the weekend, it's led to about 57,000 additional smear tests. The labs are now completely clogged up. They're not able to process some of the smear tests within the 6-week time frame that they have to do it. So they're returning the smears to GPs and saying, or going back to GPs and saying, you need to call your patient back and bring the woman in for a third test.
Yeah. The other issue that you referred to at the weekend was doctors themselves. And what, you know, I mean, it's easy to look at it as, say, some people are looking towards the labs. And as you say, we don't know. And it's easy to look at the political promises and how some of it might have stifled up further aggravation. But the doctors themselves, surely, from very early on in this crisis, there is a certain communication that one has with their patient, presumably.
Yeah, so there's, and it's one area that I think has received very little attention throughout this whole crisis, is why the doctors themselves did not tell their individual patients. So it's very easy to blame cervical check management for what was really abysmal communications and direction. But the doctors themselves did not tell those patients.
Why?
So I asked Peter Boylan, who is head of the Institute of Gynecologists and Obstetricians, that question. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, well, I don't know, he said, but some of the things that I think might have come into the equation when doctors were making these decisions was, one, that doctors say that it would have made no material difference to a woman's treatment. So obviously these reviews were initiated after women were diagnosed with cancer, so they were already in treatment.
Yeah.
So he said that was one thing. And also we were talking earlier about bias in a look back, if in these reviews, that doctors were maybe somewhat dismissive of the exact accuracy of the look back of the review. But also I think that there is a sense that disclosing the results of audits, retrospective audits, are not really done anywhere throughout the EU. The only other country that does it, and we were only beginning to do it and not doing it very well, is actually the UK. So no other EU, this is probably new to doctors. And I think as well, you can't get away from what one obstetrician said to me last week, which is that, you know, they too have to admit that they had a very patriarchal attitude, and it's something they're going to have to look at themselves.
Yeah. I see the Medical Council were out yesterday talking about warning, I suppose, about inaccurate information. I suppose that's what you've been talking about. There is so much misinformation and confusion out there where people are assuming, oh, they just weren't, certain women weren't told they had cancer, and, you know, the system trust. I mean, the communications in all of this.
The communications have been poor across the board, both from the Department of Health, from the HSE, and indeed from medical bodies themselves that have remained largely silent. I haven't heard very much from the Irish Cancer Society. So there's been about a dozen doctors who have been out trying to educate the public about what's at stake here and what's involved.
And it is complicated. Let's not for a moment say it's a very simple topic. It's immensely complicated and it's immensely scientific.
It is. And look, I understand the difficulties and why individual doctors are reticent, and maybe even the medical bodies themselves, because there is this fear that if you say anything about the future of screening, that you're, doing something that's quite anti some of the people who have been so adversely affected.
Yeah.
But nobody is suggesting that the individuals who have been damaged by the screening program are responsible
Absolutely.
For any problems with screening. This is, in the main, this is a criticism of the way the political system has dealt with the controversy, and fears as well that the legal profession are capitalising on possible problems here.
Finally, Susan, in the next couple of hours, there's going to be an implementation review coming out in relation to Sláinte Care, which is supposed to be the great panacea for the Irish Health Service. We've seen lots of headlines this week about the costs and the worries around Sláinte Care. Is it going to be the great white hope that we all hoped for?
I don't think so. No, I think it's Sláinte Care is a vision for the health service, but there's a lot of concerns around the costings involved in it. I think it's a good thing that we have some type of a vision.
And
that
it's got cross-party support.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there are real concerns about the extent to which the government has really bought into this. And also, more importantly, there's very little money to actually facilitate any great reform programme in the health service. So it will be interesting to see what they say tomorrow.
OK, Susan Mitchell, thanks very much for joining me.